to the next case. This is Antonio Morales versus Mento Inc. Mr. Curl.
May it please the court, my name is Andy Krall. I represent Antonio Morales. This is a review of a granting of summary judgment. There's basically three issues that I'd like to address with you. First, that we feel that the district court improperly used the but-for causation standard in this case. Second, that there was direct evidence of racial discrimination that wasn't considered by the court, and also that the district court was incorrect in their analysis of whether we were able to establish pretext if we go by indirect evidence. I feel all of these are kind of tied together in that we're looking at the court decision, still looking at the law. The Civil Rights Act of 1991 really hasn't seemed to trickle down, and that in Amendment M, where it speaks that all the plaintiff has to show is a motivating factor of discrimination. So that pretty much moves but-for causation out, but it's also tied into these other ones because, as I mentioned in my reply brief in Landgraf, where the Supreme Court talked about that the Civil Rights Act of 1991 was in response to Price Waterhouse, other Supreme Court decisions that were limiting what racial discrimination could be shown, that this kind of goes to direct evidence. In that, in the question of, that I presented in my brief, as far as which definition we go, it seems to be skewing that Congress wants the courts to look at these things in a broader view, rather than the limited view that that's present. There is confusion in direct evidence in what constitutes direct evidence, even in this court. And definitely among all the district courts.
Well, the direct evidence here is you have a reference to say, well, you can't fire just.
I can't just fire the. How's it going to look if I just fire the Mexican?
Well, but what about the? Is it? You're talking about direct evidence of discrimination as opposed to some sort of pretext.
Yes. But then, even if this isn't found to be direct evidence, that the courts seem to be the Congress seems to want a broader view of what it, to allow these to juries. I believe in their brief, they mentioned in their standard of review argument that 90% of these cases don't even get to trial, and that many of them are from summary judgment.
Isn't a better view of that statement, though, that Mr. Rezabek was aware that his decision to fire Mr. Morales might expose Quinto to liability?
Yes, and that's the reason I believe in the reply brief I connected it up, that there's more to that statement. What that shows is, yeah, he's aware of it. He's got a white employee, he's got a Mexican employee, same situation. They're saying, here's what I'm going to do. I'm going to let the white employee have some time to think about this. If he wants to change his statement, which I don't think he ever really changed his statement, they both said they were returning to this meeting, which is not leaving, they never left the grounds based on both of these people's statements, that that you have to tie those two things up. So the statement that he recognized that he's a Mexican, and then tie that up with the fact that he said, I don't want to fire Joe, and here's what we can do. Otherwise, as far as the direct evidence, I think that it is a more realistic standard to go by. What, while not accepted in saying he was stated remarks and other evidence that reflect a propensity by the decision maker to evaluate employees based on illegal criteria will suffice as direct evidence of discrimination. If the evidence stops short of a virtual admission of illegality, that as is said in many cases, you're not gonna, if you just say, he has to say, I'm firing you because you're Mexican, that's not gonna happen. And I believe that most jury members will be privy to what's going on here. That, and how this exchange between Rezabek and Vickery is taking place. Basically, those are my arguments, and I just ask that this be remanded back to the trial court. Thank you.
Okay, thanks. Mr. Johnson?
May it please the court, my name is Terry Dawson. I represent Quimetco in this matter before the court. As Mr. Kroll mentioned, he has appealed the summary judgment decision from below, claiming that there is direct evidence involved in this summary judgment that was granted by the Southern District of Indiana. There is no direct evidence in this case for a number of reasons. Direct evidence, of course, is rare. This court has so cited. And direct evidence also is evidence, this court has said, what the company or its agents did in a specific employment issue in question. Now, there are a very significant undisputed fact in this case.
Mr. Johnson, let's really go bottom line here. Why isn't it sufficient evidence of pretext to present evidence that a similarly situated individual, Mr. Burdine, was treated differently?
Two reasons, or maybe more than that, but let's start with two. Two would be, first of all, he's not similarly situated. At the end of the day, Mr. Burdine did not admit that he had committed the same offense.
He was given the option. He was given the option. Quimetco went out of its way to give Burdine the option of changing his story in order to retain him. Morales is simply terminated.
That's correct. Morales is terminated, and it's important to understand what is in the mind of the decision maker at the time he makes that decision about Mr. Morales. Here's what we know. At the time he makes that decision about Mr. Morales, he had left a meeting and never returned, and two white employees had left that meeting and never returned. There is no evidence whatsoever that at the time he made that decision, and he disciplined all three of those employees, that he knew anything about Mr. Burdine. At the time he made his decision regarding Antonio Morales, there were two other white employees, Robert McGuire and Jason Benge, who were also written up. They weren't at the same place in the progressive discipline procedure, but they were also disciplined. It wasn't until nearly 30 days after that decision that Mr. Morales' union comes forward and claims that there's another employee out there.
I don't know why you would argue about these other two. That's not here on appeal.
Well,
they're not up here.
Well, and that's because that shows, this whole argument's about intent, and that shows that he was faced with three employees, similarly situated, and the appellant concedes that there's no discrimination as to those individuals. Those three people, the same day they walk out the door, they're all treated exactly the same.
Why don't we talk about Burdine and Morales? Because that's what we're here about.
Certainly we are.
Yeah.
Certainly we are here about them, but the mosaic approach that the appellant has wanted to argue here, the mosaic approach, we have to take a look at all the facts.
You're drawing a timeline here then.
Yes.
All right, so you're saying that Morales and these two other people,
the other white employees,
left the meeting.
They did.
Didn't come back.
That's correct.
Two people who were disciplined, that was their first offense, so they were reprimanded or whatever you do.
All three were written up.
Morales' second offense within a year, he's terminated.
That's correct.
That's the first timeline.
That's
the second
correct.
Timeline you're drawing is with Burdine when he, after getting information from the union or somebody that after 7 days they can't fire him because it's too late or something.
That's right.
I guess was misinformation.
Correct.
So then he comes forward, and then after coming forward, finds out, whoops, that might put me out of here, and that's when they change the story.
That's exactly
you're saying,
right.
But because of those two timelines, that's why you're saying Burdine and Morales are not similarly situated?
Certainly. Certainly, that's one of the reasons they're not similarly situated. Of course, at the end of the day, as we have argued, he didn't commit the same offense, and his union signed off on that, as did Mr. Burdine at the end of the day. But everyone who ultimately admittedly committed the same offense was treated the same. They were written up. Now, I think it's also important, as you take a look at this issue, the mosaic approach that appellant has urged upon you, there are a couple of things. Mr. Morales himself has admitted, it's undisputed in the record, he does not believe that the decision maker discriminated against him. He admits that he doesn't believe George Rizabek had discriminated against him. He believes, also admits, that he believed he was terminated due to his involvement in an EPA investigation.
Do you understand that all of that is pretty much irrelevant, what he understands? In other words, just because he subjectively believes that he wasn't discharged on the basis of race doesn't mean that he wasn't discharged on the basis of race.
I do understand that. I do understand it's not dispositive, Judge.
Right.
I certainly understand it's not dispositive, but it is part of the pretext analysis. And he explicitly stated that he was asked, so you believe you would not have been terminated but for your involvement in the EPA investigation? He said, yes, sir. That's part of the evidence here. Mr. Burdine himself had stated as part of the pretext evidence here that he didn't believe that Mr. Morales was terminated based on his race. And the statements were never retracted by anyone. Mr. Burdine's statement has never been retracted that, yes, he did indeed leave the meeting and later return, just as another eyewitness had testified that he did.
Well, who engaged in the, whatever we want to call it, whether you want to call it advising Burdine or telling him to say, well, you come forward and admit you didn't come back or something, you're out of here along with Morales.
Right.
Now, but if you lie or something and say, well, I lied, I don't know what he's going to lie about. But anyway, he came back with a different story, which got him off the hook of termination and some sort of reprimand, I guess. Who was engaged in that? Was that the union? Was that management?
The union went back to Mr. Burdine and told him, that, look, essentially, here's the story. If you've committed the same offense as Mr. Morales, you will be terminated. That's undisputed. That the union told him, if you've committed the same offense, you'll be terminated. In fact, that's what Mr. Rizabek had also stated, that if he's committed the same offense.
You didn't want to fire him, but he says that's what's going to happen.
Well,
then what? They negotiated something else.
Well, according to the testimony of the affidavit from Mr. Vickery, the story is that he supposedly says, well, you know, I don't want to terminate him. How does it look if I terminate a Mexican, but no one else gets disciplined? And if his story essentially matches the eyewitness's story, that basically, he came back to the meeting. Basically, it's not the same offense, and so he was disciplined for lying to protect a coworker, which the union never agreed.
It doesn't that create enough of a fact question? Maybe it's all explainable, and you can draw these timelines and everything else. At least seeing that he got maybe a backdoor deal to get him off the hook, whereas maybe Morales didn't. Morales apparently came back about the same time. Both of them late. Which meeting was over, but they were together.
That's the testimony from yeah.
Well, but see, maybe whoever the supervisor was that saw Burdine, maybe in fact did see him show up when everybody's leaving, and she just assumed that he was there didn't happen to see Morales.
She testified that she saw, this is Donna Sylvester, saw Mr. Morales, or excuse me, Mr. Burdine leave and return in less than 5 minutes. So that he came back to the meeting, and that she basically recorded the times of anyone who was out for a significant period of time and did not return to the meeting.
So Morales is going to say that they were together.
Yes. That is what he will say, is that they were together. But it's undisputed that he never re-entered the meeting. Undisputed that he never re-entered the meeting. He left, was out for a period of time, and never re-entered. So based on that, I mean, this is not a direct evidence case. It's not a direct evidence case because whatever the story is, whatever the supposed comment is that shows direct evidence has to be the same, has to be the decision that they're making regarding that person. This supposed comment comes later. It doesn't come at the time he's terminating Mr. Morales.
What about, just assuming we don't have direct evidence and we do have a prima facie case, but we get on to the pretext issue.
Yes.
And isn't there enough jumble here to at least make a question for a jury, or at least further examination on summary judgment, about whether or not there is different treatment?
No, because the pretext question goes to, they have to prove that the reason we terminated Morales is a false reason, a phony reason. And it's not. There's no evidence in the record that the company did not honestly believe that Mr. Morales left this meeting and did not return. They have to prove that our reason is a phony reason.
Is there evidence to show that the company felt that Burdine didn't leave and came back when the meeting was over? I mean, when you look at sort of the cover-up, the sort of change of story, when you put that onto it, you know, perhaps if we didn't have the change of story scenario, I could buy your rationale, but I think you have a problem when it's the plant manager that gives a very strong signal to the union rep, who then goes to Burdine and lays it out basically as to how Burdine should respond, and Burdine then backs off and comes up with a new story. I mean, I think that's what makes this different than the run-of-the-mill type situation.
I understand. What it comes down to is when you analyze all the facts that are in here on pretext, at the end of the day, we think that the district court ultimately made the right decision, and summary judgment was appropriate.
Okay, thanks.
Thank you.
Mr. Crow, what time have you got? You got 5 minutes, if you need it.
Okay. Basically, what I think I'm hearing is that they're saying Joe Burdine's lying, and that makes it a factual issue. That's what their defense is, that this is a made-up story. And I would like to point out that some inconsistencies in there is that Donna Sylvester has said in her affidavit she saw him saw Joe Burdine go out, but there's nothing on the sign-in or sign-out sheet for that. As far as what my client has admitted, I represented him during these depositions. I was a very young attorney at these times. If you look at the deposition several times, he also says, "I don't know" to these questions. And as far as George Rezabek, most of the places I've worked have been small. This is a bigger place. I don't know the big boss. I don't have daily conversations with the big boss if I'm an employee. They're within this mosaic of evidence. Yes, the two white employees were punished, but there's a big difference between getting a warning and getting out of a job where you can't help your family anymore.
It's one or two offenses.
Yeah. But also there is the other two white employees that didn't even come, that were easily, if you're keeping the timesheet, know that they're not there. And they faced nothing until they came out on behalf of Antonio Morales, and that one of them didn't even get a punishment because he had an excuse, and we had an excuse. So I feel that, these are factual things that need to be resolved.
Okay, thanks.
Thank you.
Case will be taken under advisement.